Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 418 of The Law Entrepreneur. Once again, I am Neil Tyra on the East Coast. My good friend and buddy, Sam Malai, on the West Coast. Has it cooled off there, Sam? I heard it was pretty darn hot there for a couple weeks.
Yeah, we're back to normal. We're back to normal. But Neil, for those that are watching on YouTube right now, you're looking good. Is going to give you...
It's the lighting.
No, but you got to feel good to look good to be good.
Thank you. Started something new this for the last couple of weeks, intermittent fasting. So maybe that's it.
That is it. I also practice it. I've been doing it for a couple of years. It gives you energy and doesn't bug you down. So that's great. So we have an amazing episode today, Neil.
Pleasantly surprised. And so I'm happy to be here today because I know we're going to talk about something that I particularly am fond of, and that's working less.
Me too, Neil. Nobody likes working more, unless if you're a workaholic. But for most of us, we're looking to work less and earn more. Who doesn't want that, right, Neil?
Absolutely. And it's doable. You know, I'm shocked by the people who say I have to keep working at the pace I'm working at because, you know, I have bills, I have obligations, and I'm here to tell you, you can work less and make more.
Yep, and it all starts with you, of course, and your time. How you master your time is how you master your life. So let's get on with it and start with secret number one is using ChatGPT all day long. That is the ultimate secret to working less, especially these days in 2024. For my fellow peers who are using ChatGPT on a daily basis, you guys are ahead of the game. The more you use it, the more value and the more you're able to level up your life. And the more you're able to work less and work smarter. So first, let's evaluate. I want this to be a call to action. Do you? The question is for you as a listener: do you use ChatGPT on a daily basis, or is it only on a weekly basis, or is it very sporadically? Well, what we need to do is to increase that to be at least daily, and ideally throughout the entire day. And the more that you can incorporate it into your actual work, then the more you can work less and earn more. Let me give a short example. A good story for me is, you know, I got to create campaigns from scratch. That means, Neil, I find a niche that I'm looking to explore, but I don't know anything about it. So back in the day, I used to go and do competitive research, go on Google, go on Facebook, YouTube, and look at the competitors, what's out there, what's their slogans, what are they doing? And that would take me days, and I would literally print out the notes and I would study it. And I would spend like an hour or a couple hours just studying it. Now, what I've done, fast forward to now, what I've done is I created GPTs out of this framework about what a marketing entails. So marketing usually entails some hooks, usually entails your ad copies, includes your headlines, includes qualification questions, includes your video scripts, your ad scripts, things like that. So what I did was I created a GPT that I created the rules and the frameworks that this is how the hook should be made. This is how you should qualify a lead. And each of those has its own resources, which, you know, I've created and shared instead of Lawyer Club. And just very recently, just a couple of weeks ago, I made one GPT where all I have to do by answering a set of 7 questions, all this ChatGPT and this GPT will give me all that for me in one shot in less than 10 seconds. And that turns into a 2 or 3 page Google, essentially Google Doc of notes. That's all the hooks, the ad copies, the qualification questions, and everything that I possibly need to build a campaign from scratch. And I challenge myself. I'm like, how fast can I go create a campaign from scratch? Well, the first time I implemented this, it took me 45 minutes, and I was amazed. And I'm like, this used to take me days, and even days was pretty impressive, but 45 minutes. And then about a couple of months ago, I realized I'm like, I need to create 5 of these campaigns from scratch at once. So it was something that I really wanted to test out, 5 different kind of things. And I challenged myself, and it took me literally less than 45 minutes to create 5 of these all at once. And that was all because of ChatGPT and GPTs and being able to use AI in my practice and be able to take the frameworks that I have and create those GPTs. And that has been a game changer for me. Neil, how about you? What's your story of how you're using ChatGPT?
Yeah. Well, I admit, and I think I've done so on this program, that I was late to the game here. And in large part, I was convinced by our discussions about how you've been using ChatGPT And so I stopped dipping my toe in and dived in full stream. And I have been very pleasantly surprised about what it's been able to do for me, particularly as a solo practitioner. And, you know, I want to reach out to the fellow solos and small practitioners to say, this is the leveler. This is the tool that gives you the leverage to compete as a solo or a small firm practitioner. And I'll give you just an example. One of the things you said a couple, 3 weeks ago, or maybe a month or so ago, was that within ChatGPT, you created a GPT based on subject area, and you started feeding that GPT different data sets. Well, I just started doing the same thing, some for personal reasons, some for professional reasons, some for just for fun, you know, just to see how this would work. And here's from a fun example, here's an example. I play in a band, right? So I took our band's playlist and I plugged it in, and I plugged in several similar type playlists. And then I asked ChatGPT to create a playlist for me and started defining parameters by which I wanted that playlist done. And it was remarkable, generated literally in seconds, in the time that it typically would take me about an hour to do, you know, to do right. So then I said, well, okay, for fun, it works. How about for work? So one of the things I've been struggling with as I get a little older, and I think some attorneys can relate to this, is I've been having to start to think about succession planning. What am I going to do with my firm when I decide I no longer want to work at all? And so I started collecting some data, some articles that I felt had a pretty good handle on succession planning. And I started feeding that into a ChatGPT called succession planning. And I then populated it with enough data that I was then able to provide a framework, said, okay, I want to set up a succession plan that has these basic features. Generate an outline for me and a summary for each topical area that outline represents. And so I got a succession plan literally in minutes that it would have taken me months and months and months to flesh out manually. Now, do I have to update it and change it? Sure. But you know, that's just an example. I've started using ChatGPT to summarize the videos that I produce on a weekly basis. Because I was, before posting them to YouTube, I was having to draft the description. And while I got to be pretty good at it, that's time I want to spend doing other things. So now I get the transcript, run the transcript through ChatGPT, summarize it, give me the three main bullet points, boom, populate the video description. You just, every task that you do in your law firm is subject to improvement through the use of this tool. You just have to find a way to make it work for you.
And a lot of people struggle, like, well, how do I use it? Well, yeah. The easiest way to use it is to take copy and paste what you already know, drop it in, and ask it questions. That's it. That's as simple as that. And that kind of also gets them the needle moving forward. So if you're ever stuck, just throw it in. Even if you don't know what questions to ask, throw it in and say, what questions should I be asking? And that will give you the questions to ask. And then you get those questions and then you ask those questions. For me, Neil, the last couple months, I figured out the ultimate kind of recipe or equation for using ChatGPT. It's this: take a winning formula or framework, which is basically like an example or something, like a perfect example that you have, and combine that with your own data to give it the new AI-enabled answer. Okay, winning formula plus your own data equals magic. That's the ultimate recipe for success for using ChatGPT. Think about that. Again, what that means for you in your work environment: winning formula, your own data equals magic. Also have in mind that data is the fuel for AI. So it's very important to create your own data points, your own frameworks. So Neil, you shared that you have your own framework for thing that you do for your clients. That's perfect. That's a recipe. Well, you take that and you go into the GPT. If you go to chatgpt.com/GPTs, literally GPTs, and you'll be able to go, if you're on the pro plan of OpenAI, which I highly encourage, and you'll be able to create your own GPT. and you are able to create your own custom kind of like an app of using your own framework and throw that in there and say at the end, say, ask me a couple of questions to help me personalize this response to help me achieve this goal. Okay. And you create that ChatGPT and then you test it out. And when you give it that framework, which is basically your own framework plus instructions that to ask me a set of questions to help me personalize to achieve this goal, then you're able to use this custom GPT for you to do the same, to solve the same problem over and over. And this is what we shared about GPTs. And I was literally the first day that GPT store got released, I went and released 30 of these, Neil. And we've shared this instead of Lawyer Club, you know, when it comes to your marketing, virtual assistant job post generator, intake scripts for your intakers, Facebook ad copywriters, email copywriters, hook generators, and so many that I could list all these different things out. But that's the entire gist of it, is create your own custom GPTs or use one of ours, which we offer instead of Lawyer Club, to be able to work less.
Yes, it's really a game changer.
All right, so let's go to number two. How to work less is by delegating to elevate. Delegate to elevate. That's the ultimate goal. Because the more you're able to delegate, the more you're able to elevate yourself. Well, how do we do that? Well, first we need to identify what are those low value tasks that you're currently working on. And you really have to be critical. So you really have to evaluate, is what I'm doing worth my hourly rate? And everybody should know their hourly rate. The easy formula, I think, let me just quickly ask Google how many hours in a work year. The answer is 2,080. So just take however much was your profits, basically, your law firm, divided by 2,080. That will give you a very rough estimate of your hourly rate, essentially how much value you create or how much profit you create. Okay, it should be somewhere hopefully between $200 to maybe hopefully a lot more than that. Then that means is have a rule of thumb, is you should have a rule. Is this a $200 an hour task? If you're still doing a lot of these administrative stuff, you're losing money. You're straight up losing money. So identify those things. Also apply the Pareto principle to it. Ask yourself, is what I'm working on producing 80% of the results, the output that I want? And you're constantly looking for those 20% of tasks that's bringing 80% of your output. And I'm super critical about this, that literally 80, 90% of things that I'm surrounded by, people try to pull me into those 80% tasks, and I just have to respectfully say no, ignore it, or, you know, create rules, which we'll be talking about. And I'm very critical about those things. Neil, what are some things that work for you when it comes to delegating?
Well, first thing that I try and do is I try and listen to this guy, Sam Alai, because he's got a handle on this. And so, again, a few episodes ago, he said, stop doing your own intakes, right? And I said, well, you know, I can get that, particularly if you have a high volume kind of practice, you can spend a lot of time doing intakes. I don't have a high volume practice, but it's high enough for me. But I always felt like, okay, as the face of the firm, at least the first interaction with the client, I want to be with me. And I had to let go of that ego. And so I've recently hired somebody to do the intakes. And the way we finessed it was I videotaped a typical intake or consultation, not necessarily intake, but intake consultation, and videotaped it. And so now when somebody books a consultation, we send them the videotape first, have them review it. Okay. And then the person that I hired to do the intakes can simply say, what questions do you have? And so I can get them to do 3 to 5 times more intakes per day than I could personally do. So in terms of scaling, it was a no-brainer. Then I ran those through, again, to go back to the first point, ran it through ChatGPT and asked ChatGPT to formulate a summary email to send to the prospective client as well. So we've got this kind of all automated now. And this is all within the last month. That's going to improve our intake process dramatically. And the same was true on the back end. I always felt like the last thing that the client should do when they're signing their estate plans is interact with the attorney whose name's on the door. Just thought that was, particularly if that's the only time I actually physically get to meet them. Well, again, I had to let go of that ego and listen to Sam and say, listen, is that a high return on the investment of your time? Well, the answer is no, obviously. To sit and watch people and direct them to sign a few pages, yes, there's a personal interaction, but I can achieve that in other ways. I don't have to spend a half hour driving to the office, a half hour in the signing, you know, session, and a half hour driving home. Is that worth $350 an hour? No. No. So I've delegated that as well. So I don't know what the hell I'm going to do with my time now that I'm not doing intakes and I'm not doing signings.
You're going to elevate. You're going to elevate. You're going to go into focus on more business revenue generating thing, or you're going to focus on things that make you happy. And, you know, your life is going to level up. Neil, as you were sharing, I realized I'm like trying to decipher what's the ideal formula for our team. So I just came up with the ideal law firm team formula.
It's what's this: that?
80% virtual assistants, 20% A players. So 80% of the tasks that your law firm has to do, 80% of those tasks can be delegated to virtual assistants. And then that, you pair that up with those A players, those in-house or people even either in-house or people in the US based A players who are the directors, managers, or the lawyers who are kind of oversee the 80% of the virtual assistants who do a lot of the work. That has proven to be a winning formula for us. And we're getting closer and closer, getting even more and more of, you know, virtual team. And the goal isn't to find the cheapest virtual assistants also. Let me just put this out there, because we always get questions, you know, how much do you pay? Is this worth it? Is it not? Ultimate goal, and I've been through this myself, you know, trying to find the $4 or $5 VAs and all that stuff. Over time, I'm looking to find the best virtual assistants. And it's all about ROI, return your investment when it comes to your team and your virtual assistants. So find, sometimes the most expensive people or have a higher ROI than a lower, more less expensive team members. Literally, one of my highest ROI people that I have in working with me are on the higher salary range, and I'm happy to pay that higher salary range. So have that in mind, and also have in mind to always ideally work with specialists, not generalists. When you get started with virtual assistants, you know, it's okay to build up your base with some generalists, you know, to pick up some of their load. But over time, you'll find that the more ideal structure is to have a bunch of specialists who are really great at just one particular thing and who step in for that one specific role.
Yeah, I think it's really a very smart idea, Sam. And I particularly like the idea of picking and looking for the best virtual assistant as opposed to the cheapest. I think we have to reframe our thinking, because, you know, in the past, I think we've always thought of virtual assistants as an overseas assistant who works for a very minimal scale to do trivial or menial or data-driven tasks. And once we get those solved, what else do we have that we can delegate? And so I started from the premise that I'm going to delegate to virtual attorneys. Okay? Very specifically, I wanted, you know, an attorney to handle these tasks. Is it more expensive than a generalized virtual assistant? Of course it is. Of course it is. But I'm having them do very specific legal tasks that they can do cheaper than I can do. And therefore, I can spend more time generating more business and leveling this whole thing up.
I'm proud of you, Neil. That's amazing. And I'm just going to add one more. And I actually posted on my Facebook page about this. And I shared, delegate to elevate. Micromanaging holds everyone back. Trust your team to own their tasks and watch your law firm thrive. So there's different levels of delegation. Very low level is when you're controlling the situation. You're giving direct instructions, kind of, you know, one-sided, do this, then jump back with me, do this, and moving forward. But ideally, the level 5 of delegation, like we could do a whole episode about this, is to have people make the decisions and move things forward based on the objective, one objective that they have to accomplish. So, but overall, you don't want to be micromanaging your team. The more you do that, the more they're going to get bogged down and the less value that you have from delegating. So have that in mind.
You know, Sam, I saw something this week that popped up in my Facebook feed, and it was a picture of something that you could buy, and I had no idea what it was. It just intrigued me. And so I actually clicked on it just to find out what it was, and I found out it's something called a mouse jiggler. Do you know what a mouse jiggler is?
Yes, yeah.
I had no idea what it was, okay? So I looked at it, and so this is a device that jiggles your mouse on your computer in order to keep you from being logged out of the server or logged out of the Zoom call or whatever. And I gather it's a way of convincing your employer that you're really there working when perhaps you're off running to get a sandwich. And I was thinking, if from the employer side, if you're worried about tracking your employees' keystrokes to make sure they're being productive or they're working when they say they're working, you've got a big problem. And if you're the employee who's trying to get over on your employer by using a mouse jiggler, I know, I got a big kick out of it. I laughed.
These days, Neil, I'm more concerned about the in-house employees or people that are US-based, you know, slacking off more than offshore. I've seen more of that happening.
A mouse jiggler. I couldn't believe it.
Mouse jigglers. All right, let's go to number three.
Okay.
The rule for working less is to create no rules. No rules. The question is for our listener, do you have your no rules? Well, I sure
do. You don't mean to not have any rules. You mean rules that say no.
Correct. So that's all about creating boundaries and being very clear what you shouldn't do, because a lot of times what you shouldn't do is a lot more important than what you should do. So let me just share with you my list of no rules. I have about seven of them. Number one is no meetings before 11 a.m. because I want to protect my morning time. And Neil will talk about this because I know you have some stuff to talk about that. Number two is no meetings after 5 p.m. because after 5 p.m., it's family time for me. And I'm going to put my phone away and be in the moment and play with my two little cute girls. Number three is no meetings on Tuesdays and Thursdays. There's like set days that I don't want to be bogged down with those kinds of things. Number four is no checking emails first thing in the morning. That's the last thing I want to do. I don't want to start off the day being reactionary. I leave that usually scheduled out later, much later in the day, and I don't make emails a big focus part of my work. You know, that may not be the case for most people, but for some people, that might be a smart thing to do. Number five, no notifications on during work hours. This is really important for me. iPhone has an amazing feature called the focus mode. When Apple released this update, I loved it and I started sharing it inside of our community. It's a little setting that allows you to automatically schedule to say, hey, between 8 a.m. and 5 p.m., I don't want to receive any notifications. I don't want to receive any app notifications. I don't want to receive any text notifications or whatever rules you want to create for yourself. So for me, I create exceptions out of my texts. So maybe I want to receive texts from my wife or from my COO or maybe from my mother-in-law who needs to get in contact with me. I create those exceptions and also create some exceptions for specific apps, maybe from my bank, you know, from Google, you know, kind of security-based or my financial-based kind of apps. But for everything else, social media and everything, all other garbage, I don't want to receive any notifications. And only when I go on my phone and I click on the actual app when I see the notifications. But I don't want to be distracted throughout the day for those things. Number six, no calls during lunch hours. If I'm eating, doesn't matter who it is, I'm not picking it up. Number seven is not taking on calls without an agenda. Neil, whenever I receive a text, hey, Sam, I need to talk to you. I always send a text back or audio message. Sure, if you can please let me know what we're going to be talking about. And a lot of times, the context will just allows me to quickly reply back or send an audio message back without me needing to get on the phone to be able to, you know, do that. So those are my rules. Neil, what are some of your rules?
Yeah, I've had a couple of rules that I ended up breaking that I've had to re-implement. And so it proves the importance of them. You know, I'm one of those people that allow potential clients to schedule their own consultations. And we were talking about consultations before. But using, I use Schedule Once, but you can use Calendly or other types of scheduling programs. The problem with that, or the challenge, and it's completely manageable, is to make sure you block out times that you're willing to take those meetings. And for me, it was never on a Monday, never on a Friday, nothing after 5 o'clock, and nothing before 10 a.m. So that's really Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from, you know, 10 to 5 o'clock. I got away from that and started taking things on Friday. And pretty soon I found I couldn't leave to go where I needed to go for the weekend or do what I needed to do because I'd booked myself or allowed myself to be booked. So I've had to re-implement that one. So that's one. I've turned off all notifications during the day, all of them. And with the exception, as you said, of my family can get through. But other than that, I've turned off all notifications, and I've gotten way better at managing my email time. And part of the challenge with being always accessible, and you know, that's a feature for my law firm, that I can always have the tools that I need to manage and run my law firm. The flip side of that is I'm always capable of being interrupted by outside influences. So you have to manage that to make sure that you have these rules of no, as you say, to guide your productivity.
And I really want to hear people's no rules. I know some of us are watching us on YouTube or going to be watching this on YouTube later. Please share in the comment, what are some of your no rules? Some things that people, you try to hold yourself accountable to, and then you want other people to follow through. And, you know, try to create your rules before other people create your rules for you.
Yeah, one of the ones that I've had a challenge with is, you know, clients who can only meet after hours. Okay, I'm not willing to do that. So am I willing to give up that client? No, we're going to have to work some other arrangement out, and that's what we've done. So, but that's my no rule. I'm not going to meet after hours.
And just also have in mind that these are just these rules are just frameworks. Sometimes these rules will be broken, and that's okay. You know. To have them in mind. So, you know, don't feel bad. And sometimes you do have to, you know, make some exceptions. All right. Number four is mastering time management is the secret to working less. And that's being really structured with your time, with a couple of productivity tools that we'll share with you to make sure that you're very clear on what has to be accomplished, but also what has to get prioritized throughout the day. Well, we've shared this before, the two ultimate productivity tools in our arsenal is number one, Google Calendar, which allows you to schedule and block out time, not just your time, but also your time with other people on your team or your clients or your prospects. And number two, I use Todoist as a task manager, which allows me to keep track of the tasks that I have to accomplish on a daily basis so that I'm clear exactly what I have to do before the day starts. And what I do, Neil, is on a Saturday nights, I do my Todoist and Google Calendar review. And I ask myself, does this align with my long-term goals? Is this my ideal work week? If it isn't, then I make notes of that. I make cancellations. I move things around. And I'm always looking to optimize my days and my weeks based on my Google Calendar and based on what I see my Todoist. And the other thing that I always also try to do is in my Todoist, I use the prioritize feature. That means on any given day, I have about 30, 40 different tasks that I have to do. But out of that 30 to 40 different tasks, there's usually about two or three that are like priorities, things that I really, really, really have to get done that day that are really going to move the needle forward. Sometimes, you know, if I have a lot of meetings, things happen. I know that as long as I complete my two or three priorities, that's okay. I had a great day. And if I had just happened to finish my priorities and my other tasks, amazing. I had an exceptional day. And I don't, you know, I don't get bogged down in the details. I try to move things forward. If I really can complete it, I move it forward. Also, if there's anything miscellaneous that may take a lot of time of like discovering, let's just say if there's a new tools or anything like that, new articles, I try not to do that throughout the week. I schedule that for a Friday. These are like my Friday miscellaneous days, kind of discovery day, where I have more time to kind of explore those things. Usually out of those things, maybe one out of the five tools becomes something that I could put into practice. Then I go schedule it out. Okay, Tuesday, I'm going to go implement this tool. That's how I kind of structure my day. And I, you know, use my time management to do that.
Yeah, I do something very similar, maybe on a more higher level, not quite as granular. So what I've done is blocked my days off or created space in my days for types of activity. So I'll have, you know, an hour for legal work. I'll have an hour for marketing work. I'll have an hour for professional development. I'll have an hour for dealing with colleagues and clients and communications. And so I space those on the calendar. I put those on the calendar where I'm most optimally set up to accomplish them. And then in my task list, I have categories that correspond to those blocks. So that when I have, you know, the 2-hour legal block on a Tuesday, now I can go into my task list and find all the legal tasks that I need to perform, and they're prioritized. So I know what to do in that 2-hour block. Same with marketing. I have marketing on a Thursday. You know, I have a set of marketing tasks that are prioritized. So, and I keep refining that list and adding to it and going and deleting from it. So I think it's kind of the same thing. It's just not putting a discrete task on your calendar. It's more putting a block of time on the calendar in which you can do multiple discrete tasks.
I'll add one more framework, which is have a high sense of urgency when it comes to things, to getting things done. A lot of people just have a wish list of things that I got to do this. Well, don't wait on any decisions and don't wait on anybody or anything. If something comes up that's important that you know that's going to move the needle forward, the question is, how am I going to do this, prioritize this, and get this done this week? What's the first step that I have to take to move the needle moving forward? Have a high sense of urgency. And also, if there's something that could get done quickly, don't delay it. Just, you know, if it's something that could be done in less than 5 minutes, just do it right then and then. You know, a lot of times when I have a meeting with my partner, things come up. I'm not saving those notes. I'm literally sending out the texts, making the conversation, making the phone call right then and then to get that moving forward right then and then. And by the time I leave the meeting, I'm already done through half of those things that I have to do, or I've already took the first step. So have a super high sense of urgency based on whatever you need to get done, like your life depends on it. Number 5, you matter most. Prioritizing self-care and mental health. Because ultimately, Neil, it all starts with you, right? Your entire life, your work, your family, your friendship, and everything, you're the only common denominator. So if you don't feel good, if you're not working on yourself, eating well, working out, feeling good, then you can never make the right decisions and make the right actions to get the right results. And for me, when I kind of shifted my focus to be kind of like a chief strategy officer of my law firms and my legal academy, I realized that I need to be on my top physical, spiritual, mental, emotional form in order for me to work on a super high level, especially when it comes to my brain. So I put an extra focus on me to better myself. So now for the past 2 years, what I do is 3 times a week, I'm working with a trainer, ideally in the mornings. The order really matters, by the way. I realize the order really matters. You know, it's not something I want to delay to later. Why? Because I want to take advantage of the benefit of a good workout session. Second is I signed up for this thing called Stretch Lab, which is this cool little business in Los Angeles. And hopefully they have them all around the US, which is a place where you just go and get stretched. It's a kind of like a good 30 minutes of meditation. Kind of treat it as a meditation time. Sometimes I put in my headphones and I listen to a very high level podcast and allows my body to kind of, you know, reset. Also, most mornings, I wake up at 5 a.m. I go to a super early Gemara class, which is basically a Jewish class, which is kind of feeds my spirituality side. And also do a prayer session at 6:45 a.m. and I get back home by 7:30. So that's this kind of a spiritual aspect. And along with that, I'm always looking to, you know, how am I improving myself when it comes to education, technology, you know, tapping into my energy, the right eating well. All that stuff, you know, you need to prioritize those things. You know, if you prioritize work, or your work is going to suffer ultimately. Prioritize your life and your health. Your work will get better as a result of that. Neil, what are some things that are working for you?
Well, I'm a big proponent of this as well. Ever since I read the book Morning Miracle by Hal Elrod, who's created kind of a cottage industry about this. Now, I don't have the 5 o'clock morning routine. One of the advantages of being a solo practitioner and working largely from home is I can dictate when I want to start. So my morning routine is a little later, but it's still very much a similar routine. And a couple of things, you know, in addition to what you've spoken about. I'm a big Apple guy, and on your phone or watch, there's a app called Fitness Plus, which has, you know, a billion workouts that you can do. You never need a trainer if you don't want one. There's these personalized, you know, routines, training routines that you can do, and I use that in the gym. But what I recently turned my attention to is they also have guided meditation. And I keep going on and off with meditation, and I kind of recently have rededicated myself to that. And I've been using the guided meditations in Apple Fitness, and they are remarkably well-suited for what I'm looking for. So I really like that. The other thing that I've been wanting to do is I want to spend more time reading, but time is important, you know, commodity. I don't have 2 or 3 hours to spend reading every day. I know friends of mine are reading, you know, 60, 70 books a year. So I came across this platform called Shortform, which basically summarizes a book, gives you an entire book in about a half hour. What I really like about it is the quality of the summary. And at the same time, they compare and contrast it to similar writings in other books. So, for instance, if you're reading a book about productivity and a claim is made, they'll cross-reference that to other books to either substantiate that claim or to give another viewpoint. And I really like that because it's more than just a single viewpoint of what that book is espousing. It gives you a more rounded approach. So I've been spending. And you can set it up. How much time do you want to spend reading? You can say, I want a 15-minute summary. I want a 30-minute summary. I want a one-hour summary. I set it up for 30 minutes because that seems to work for me. It gives me the right level of detail. So I highly recommend short form.
I love it. And what you did was, Neil, you took this big goal of, you know, that you need to read, you know, 2 or 3 hours a day and simplifying it and making it easy to do. And, you know, for people that are looking to build, for all of us that are looking to build a new habit, don't think of it like you got to go work out 5 days a week or you know, do 3 months of session. Instead, say, I'm going to go work out for 10 minutes. Make it very easy. Make it very digestible. Make it something that you can actually do. And by you going there for 10 minutes, by the time you get there, maybe you may spend 30 minutes. And then you're going to feel good. And then it's going to build the momentum. You know what? I'm going to go for the second day, maybe for 15 minutes this time. And you, from there, you build a momentum to build that consistency. So break down your goals and simplify it, and don't psych yourself out and say, I'm going to do 5 times a week, whatever. And just say, I'm going to go to the gym for 10 minutes. And I just want to provide the call to action, you know, in the morning, the first 30 minutes, it should belong to you. It should be sacred. So in just the same way that Neil incorporated his morning time and making it kind of dedicated to himself, you know, have some quiet time. Drink coffee, do some guided meditation, read, work out, whatever it is, just make sure it's dedicated to you. And then when you feel good, then on the back end, you'll see that will affect the rest of your work life and work will become easy.
Another great resource there is the book Atomic Habits by James Clear, and talks all about this ability to build a habit in small incremental steps. I will also recommend Can't Do the Book, sign up for his newsletter. It is simply the single best newsletter I read all week.
I heard that Atomic Habits is always super highly recommended.
Yeah.
Neil,
Read the newsletter.
Read the newsletter, if not. Nice. All right, so let's do a recap. Might have been one of the best episodes we've done. Is the recipes to working less and earning more is, number one, use ChatGPT all day long. The more you do, the more you're able to work less. Number two, delegate to elevate. Delegate more. And build your ultimate dream team, which is 80% virtual assistants and 20% A players. Number three is come up with a list of no rules. No, really, go do it. Go pull out your Apple Note or whatever phone you're on and start writing out your no rules. Number four, master your time. Before the week starts, look at your schedule and say, ask yourself, is this my ideal week? If not, make some cancellations. If not, move things around. If not, add some things. And number five, you matter most. Prioritize your day and start with you, because if when you feel good, then the rest of your life will follow that. Amazing.
Yep.
All right. We have an interesting next episode, so make sure to tune in and we'll see you next time.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to The Law Entrepreneur. If you found value in the show, please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. And don't forget to share the episode with a friend. It could help transform their life. To get access to a treasure trove of exclusive free resources for lawyers, go to joinlawyerclub.com. Again, that's joinlawyerclub.com. We'll see you on the next episode.